నమో భగవతే వాసుదేవాయ.
బిగినింగ్ దిస్ చాప్టర్, దిస్ సెవెన్ చాప్టర్ ఎంటైటిల్డ్ సన్ ఆఫ్ ద్రోణ పనిష్డ్. యాక్చువల్లీ ప్రభుపాద్ టైటిల్డ్ ద చాప్టర్, హీ కుడ్ హవ్ టైటిల్డ్ అస్ అశ్వత్థామ పనిష్డ్, బట్ ఈస్ యాక్చువల్లీ గివెన్ ద టైటిల్ అస్ సన్ ఆఫ్ ద్రోణ పనిష్డ్. సో బై దట్ ప్రభుపాద్ ఇస్ ఇండికేటింగ్ లైక్ వెన్ అ పర్సన్ యాక్ట్స్ ఇంప్రాపర్లీ ఆర్ ఇర్రెస్పాన్సిబుల్లీ, హీ యాక్చువల్లీ బ్రింగ్స్ బ్లేమ్ ఆర్ ఇన్ఫేమీ టు ద పర్సన్ హూమ్ హీ రిప్రజెంట్స్. సో బికాస్ అశ్వత్థామ యాక్టెడ్ ఇంప్రాపర్లీ, సో బై దట్ ద్రోణాస్ నేమ్ ఇస్ యాక్చువల్లీ స్పాయిల్డ్ ఇన్ దట్ సెన్స్. సో విల్ స్టార్ట్ విత్ ద ఫస్ట్ వర్స్. శౌనక ఉవాచ నిర్గతే నారదే సూత భగవాన్ బాదరాయణ శ్రుతవాంస్తద్ అభిప్రేతం తత కిం అకరోద్ విభుః. So I'll give a brief breakup of the first 11 verses and then we will, when you proceed to the next section, we'll give the further breakup. So this chapter begins with a question asked by the sages of Naimisharanya. Just like in the previous chapter, Vyasdev asked question to Narada Muni as to what Narada Muni did after the departure of the Bhakti Vedantas. So now Shaunaka Rishis are rishis headed by Shaunaka Rishi, they are actually asking this question to Suta Goswami as to what did Vyasdev do after Narada Muni departed. So then responds Suta Goswami starts answering in the second verse. And the second to eighth verse, Suta Goswami tells like what Vyasdev did after Narada Muni departed. So a disciple, a sincere disciple, will do whatever the Guru has instructed him after the departure of the Guru. So Vyasdev in one sense, second to eighth verse, it is described that how Vyasdev followed the instructions of Narada Muni. And then in the ninth verse, the sages of Naimisharanya, they ask another question to Suta Goswami. Because they ask a question about Shukadeva Goswami, who was actually liberated from birth. Why did Shukadeva Goswami take up the trouble of studying Srimad Bhagavatam, who is actually liberated from birth and who is actually beyond all the scriptural rules and regulations? Why did he take up the study of Srimad Bhagavatam? So that question of Shaunaka Rishi is based on the eighth verse in which Suta Goswami says that Vyasdev, after compiling Srimad Bhagavatam, he taught it to Shukadeva Goswami. So therefore the question is asked by the sages as to why did Shukadeva Goswami study Srimad Bhagavatam when he was already liberated. Then in answer to that, in two verses, in verse number 10 and 11, Suta Goswami answers as to why actually Shukadeva Goswami took up the study of Srimad Bhagavatam. The famous Atma Rama verse comes there. So we'll go to the second verse. Suta uvacha Brahmanadyam Sarasvatyam Ashrama Paschimetate Samya Prasayiti Prokta Rishinam Satravardhanaha. So Vyasdev, after the departure of Narada Muni, he followed the instructions of Narada Muni, and this verse describes the place and the atmosphere in which Vyasdev meditated on the Supreme Lord, meditate on the pastimes of the Supreme Lord and then compiled Srimad Bhagavatam. So we see that in order to perform spiritual activities, a particular place and a suitable atmosphere is actually necessary. So Vyasadeva chose the western bank of the river Saraswati in order to meditate upon the Supreme Lord. So here it is explained, Sarasvatyam ashrama paschime tate. So Prabhupada writes a very important point. He says that ashram is a place where spiritual culture is foremost. Usually we think, sometimes people think ashram means, people think mainly the place where maybe say sadhus live. No, actually, ashram is a place wherever spiritual culture is foremost, that place is actually ashram. So in the Vedic culture, all the four stages of life, they are called as ashram. Brahmachari ashram, grihastha ashram, vanaprastha ashram, and sannyas ashram. Ashram is something which is common to all the four stages. So in the, even in a house, in a home, if the spiritual culture is foremost, then it is called a grihastha ashram. On the other hand, if in a, say in a temple or in the brahmachari place of the brahmachari stay, like if the spiritual culture is not foremost, then it cannot be called an ashram. So Prabhupada says that none of these people, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyasis, none of them are less important as far as spiritual culture is concerned. The difference is a matter of formality. And sannyasis are held in high esteem on the strength of their practical renunciation. So from a spiritual point of view, there is no actually difference between like brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyasi if they are following the spiritual culture. But from the point of view of practical renunciation, the sannyasis are held in high esteem. Next verse.
Tasmin sva ashrame vyaso badari shanda mandite asino apa upasprishya pranidadyau manasvayam.
So Vyasadeva, he sat down for meditation after performing achaman. He touched water for purification. So water is actually considered as a agent by which we can purify ourselves. So somehow in the Western culture, like sometimes people actually consider water as a, well, if there is water in the bathroom, like they feel that somebody, uncivilized person has gone. So they don't consider water as a matter of purification. There's only carpets everywhere. So water is actually an ingredient for purification. And what Narada Muni instructed Vyasadeva was that he spoke in the fifth chapter, Ato Mahabhaga Bhavan Amogadrug Shuchishrava Satyarato Dritavrata Urukramasya Kilabandha Muktaye Samadhinanu Smaratas Vicheshtitam. So Narada Muni told Vyasadeva to meditate on the pastimes of the Lord. He said, because you are fortunate, Ato Mahabhaga Bhavan Amogadruk, because you have pure vision, Shuchishrava Satyarato, because you are actually situated in truthfulness, and because you are fixed in your vows. So therefore, you must meditate on the pastimes of the Lord, and then you must describe the pastimes of the Lord. So he basically followed that particular instruction of Narada Muni. So that is why he sat down to meditate under the instructions of Narada Muni. So when he meditated, what did Vyasadeva see in his vision? So that is described in the next verse.
bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihite male apashyat purusham purnam mayam cha tad apashrayam. So Vyasdev saw with an undisturbed mind, bhakti yogena manase samyak pranihite amale. Pranihite amale, that means like with a purified or undisturbed mind, he saw. How did he actually attain that purified mind? How could he have the undisturbed mind? Because of the practice of bhakti yoga. Bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihite male. So with an undisturbed mind, being purified by the process of bhakti yoga, he saw. What did he see? Apashyat purusham purnam. Purusham purnam. So here purusha actually refers to Krishna himself. Because few verses later it is explained, Krishne parama purushe. So Srila Vishnu Chakotaku says, there it's explained that because the word you comes as Krishne Parama Purushe. Yaya Samohito Jivo. Yasyam Veshruya Manayam Krishne Parama Purushe. So therefore, because Krishna is described as Parama Purusha. So here also the word Purusham Purnam refers to Krishna. And Purusham Purnam, he saw Krishna along with. The word Purnam means he saw the complete personality of Godhead Krishna. So that means he saw Krishna along with his amshas, his expansions and expansions of expansions and avatars. So not only we will see that Vyasadeva basically saw five things. The first thing is that he saw Krishna, and second thing is he saw Krishna along with his expansions and all the amshas. So that is why the word Purusham Purnam is used. Purusham Purnam. And the next thing he saw is that Apashyam Purusham Apashyat Purusham Purnam Mayam Chatad Apashya. Next thing he saw is that he saw all the energies of Krishna. He saw the energies of Krishna. Srila Vishnu Chakotaku says that he saw, Vyasadeva saw the energies headed by Chit Shakti. All the energies of the Lord he saw. It's explained in one of the later purports. He saw all the internal energies of the Lord. This is the third thing he saw. And the fourth thing he saw is that he also saw how the living entity he is actually identifying, because of misidentification with the matter, he is actually suffering the threefold miseries. So that is described in the next verse. So he is the living entity under the influence of the illusory energy of the Lord. He is actually suffering the threefold miseries. So that is also described in this verse, because it is explained Mayam cha tad apashrayam. So he saw Krishna along with his amshas and avatars, second thing, and then third thing he saw is that he saw all the internal energies of the Lord, and the fourth thing he saw is that he saw the external energy of the Lord. But the external energy was standing behind the Lord. Mayam chatad apashrayam. External energy had taken shelter, behind the Lord. In fact, in the second canto, Lord Brahma says that Vilajya Manaya Yasya Hatum Iksha Pate Muya Vikattante Vimohita Vikattante Mamaham Iti Durdiyah. That is said that the illusory energy of the Lord, Vilajya Manaya Yasya, being ashamed to stand in front of the Lord, illusory energy is standing behind the Lord. And when a person comes under the illusory energy of the Lord, a person actually talks first grade nonsense. That's how the Prabhupada actually translates the verse. And what is the first, what Prabhupada calls as first grade nonsense? Basically, such a person talks in terms of me and mine. So Vyasadeva saw Krishna along with his expansions, along with the spiritual energy, and fourthly he saw the external energy of the Lord standing behind the Lord. And he also saw the living entity, because of being under the influence of the illusory energy of the Lord, is actually suffering the miseries. Next verse. Yaya sammohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam paropi manute nartam tatkritam chapi badyate. So Vyasadeva, see, the instruction of Narada Muni is that Narada Muni had told Vyasadeva to meditate on the Supreme Lord and describe the Supreme Lord's pastimes and qualities and his form, the sweetness of the Supreme Lord. Narada Muni told Vyasadeva to describe the sweetness of the Supreme Lord. But in order to describe the sweetness of the Lord, in order for a living entity to experience the sweetness of the Lord, the living entity has to see the Lord. So then what was the purpose of Vyasadeva seeing Maya? The previous verse it was described that Vyasadeva also saw the external energy standing behind the Lord. So what was the purpose of Vyasadeva seeing the external energy of the Lord who was standing behind the Supreme Lord? Because the reason is that the living entity being afflicted by the external energy, a living entity has become diseased. In a diseased condition, a living entity cannot experience the sweetness of the Supreme Lord's form, qualities and activities. So a living entity first has to be cured of the disease of misidentification with matter. So therefore in this verse Vyasadeva is giving a diagnosis of the conditioned soul's disease. As a doctor, he is giving a diagnosis of the conditioned soul's disease. Because of the disease, a conditioned soul is not able to experience the sweetness of the Lord's form. So Vyasadeva, the previous verse is described that how Vyasadeva saw the Supreme Lord along with his expansions and internal energy and external energy. So in this verse, it is described a living entity is not able to experience the sweetness of the Lord's form because of the disease of misidentification with matter. So he's actually giving a diagnosis of the living entity's disease. So here Prabhupada writes, so Vishnu Chakravarti says that there can be no prescription for cure without first seeing the disease. So in this verse he is giving a diagnosis of the disease, and the next verse he is actually prescribing the cure. How can the living entity be cured of the disease? So Prabhupada in this purport, he talks about how the Supreme Lord deals with the conditioned soul. He says that essentially the Supreme Lord deals with the conditioned soul in three ways. The first way is that the Supreme Lord, like an affectionate father, who does not want his children to be punished by another agent, but still Just like an affectionate father does not want his children to be punished by another agent. Although he does not want it, but still an affectionate father puts his children under the control of some powerful, severe man for punishment in order to actually reform his children. So similarly, the Supreme Lord deals with a conditioned living entity in a way that by putting the living entity under the influence of the illusory energy, and in this way the living entity actually undergoes different punishments. So Maya is compared to that severe man or a powerful man who actually punishes the children. So this is the first way in which the Supreme Lord deals with the living entity. And the second way, Supreme Lord deals with the living entity is that the Supreme Lord himself personally comes in this world and he actually exhibits his pastimes, and the Supreme Lord pleads with the living entities in order to come back to him. Just like a king sometimes personally goes to the prison house and appeals to the prisoners to get reformed. So one way king acts is like king actually puts the prisoners under the supervisor, under a superintendent. Another way a king acts is like king personally sometimes goes to the prison house and then pleads the prisoners to get reformed. This way Krishna also personally deals with the conditioned soul. And third way Krishna acts with the living entity is that Krishna actually guides a living entity through a bona fide spiritual master. These are the three ways by which actually Krishna deals with the conditioned soul. And so Prabhupada writes one beautiful statement here. He says that by the influence of the speeches of saintly persons who have actually realized the Supreme, men are engaged in his transcendental service. By the influence of the speeches of the saintly persons who have actually realized the Supreme, men are engaged in his transcendental service. And another thing Prabhupada writes is that he says that the relationship between the living entity and the Supreme Lord is actually eternal. And not only it is eternal, it is a transcendental relation. Because if the relationship were not eternal and if it were not transcendental, then Lord would not have taken the trouble to reclaim the fallen conditioned souls from the clutches of Maya. So because the relationship is eternal and transcendental, that is why Lord is taking so much of trouble to actually reclaim the conditioned souls. So next verse. So the next verse, Vyasadeva is giving a remedial measure. So Bhakti Yoga, he is giving a remedial measure for mitigating the miseries. Anartho pashamam sakshat bhakti yogam adokshaje lokasya janato vidvams chakre sattvata samhitam. So, the next thing Srila Vyasadeva saw is that he saw that the living entity who are under the influence of illusory energy, they can come out of the, because of being under the influence of the illusory energy, they are undergoing so many miseries. And they can get relief from miseries when they take to Bhakti Yoga. So therefore, the next thing which Vyasadeva saw is that he saw Bhakti Yoga to the Lord. So Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti explains that Vyasadeva saw bhakti, which is the chief element of the Lord's chit shakti. So this is the last thing which Vyasadeva saw, that the Vyasadeva saw that living entity can get relief from miseries only by taking shelter of Bhakti Yoga. And what is the nature of Bhakti Yoga? This Bhakti Yoga is the chief element of the Lord's Chit Shakti. And then he mentions few more points about Bhakti Yoga. The first point is Bhakti Yoga, the chief element of Lord Chit Shakti. And second is that Bhakti Yoga can destroy the illusion caused by Maya. And the third point he mentions is that Bhakti Yoga arises from the actions of Anugraha Shakti of the Lord. Bhakti Yoga arises from the mercy of the Supreme Lord. And the fourth is that Bhakti Yoga controls even the Supreme Lord. So this is the last thing which Vyasadeva saw, that after seeing that how the living entities are under the influence of illusion energy, he is saying that when they take shelter of Bhakti Yoga, they can get relief from the miseries. So this is the remedial measure which Vyasadeva is giving. And in order to give Bhakti Yoga, so he saw that people do not know that Bhakti Yoga is the process by which they can get relief from miseries. So in order to educate people on the process of Bhakti Yoga, Vyasadeva has compiled Srimad Bhagavatam. Lokasya ajanato vidvams. People do not know, they are ajanato, they do not know this. So therefore, Chakre Satvata Samhitam. Chakre means he compiled. What did he compile? Satvata Samhita. So one of the names of Srimad Bhagavatam is Satvata Samhita. So for this purpose, he compiled Srimad Bhagavatam. So Prabhupada writes here, the purport, revival of dormant affection or love of Godhead does not depend on the mechanical system of hearing and chanting, but it solely depends on the mercy of Krishna. And then he mentions, but even with the prescribed forms of hearing and chanting, there is at once mitigation of the superfluous and unwanted miseries of material existence. And such mitigation of material affection does not wait for development of transcendental knowledge. Some statements from Prabhupada's purport. So now, in the next verse, Sudha Goswami says that, so now Vyasadeva has compiled Srimad Bhagavatam. So the next verse, Sudha Goswami says, what is the effect of hearing this Srimad Bhagavatam? Yasyam vai shruyamanayam krishne parama purushe bhaktir utpadyate pumsam shokamoha bayapaha. So in this verse, Sudha Goswami says, there are two results of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. One is the primary result and another is the secondary result. The primary result is Bhaktir Utpadyate Pumsam. Bhaktir Utpadyate Pumsam. That means a person develops love for the Supreme Lord. So here the word Bhakti actually refers to Prema Bhakti. Here it actually refers to Prema Bhakti, because we heard in the very second verse of the Bhagavatam, Sadyo Hridi Avarudhyatetra Kritibi Susru Subis Takshanat. By giving oral reception to Srimad Bhagavatam, Supreme Lord becomes captured in the heart of a devotee. So Lord becomes captured in the heart of a devotee means like only when a person comes to the stage of Prema. So only in the stage of Prema, Krishna comes under the control of a devotee. That is the sixth characteristic of devotional service, Sri Krishna Akarshini. So therefore, here the word Bhakti actually refers to Prema Bhakti. And the secondary unsought result of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is Shoka Moha Bayapaha, one becomes freed from lamentation, illusion and fear. And usually a person laments about the past and a person is an illusion of the present things and is fearful of the future. So he is actually mitigated from all these three miseries. So Srila Vishnachakra Thakur writes a very brilliant point. He is using Kaimuttika Nyaya. So he says that simply by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, prema arises. And then he says, then what to speak of if a person engages others in hearing it? Means like he will get even more actually benefit. And what to speak of when a person actually speaks Srimad Bhagavatam, it will have even more benefit. And then he says, what to speak of when a person actually engages others in speaking it. So it's like a gradation of benefits like that is mentioned. So he says, destruction of samsara is an unsought result for the devotees. Nevertheless, the devotees also achieve this. So we can see, so one of the practical result of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is that like so much of our mental energy gets conserved. If we interest, well, like most of the people, we spend so much of our mental energy about lamenting about the past or being fearful of the future or always illusion about the present. Like so many anxieties all the time, like we are investing so much of energy about past, present and future. But by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, like so much of mental energy gets conserved. So Prabhupada writes a very beautiful point. As I mentioned here, the word bhakti means prema bhakti. It actually refers to, means a person will develop love for Krishna. So Prabhupada says that love is the only word that can be properly used to indicate the relation between Krishna and Jiva. That is the only word by which we can actually properly describe the relation. And then he says, Krishna is actually a supreme male. He is a Parama Purusha. And the living entity is actually, he comes under the category of Prakriti, which is actually female in nature. So therefore he says, affection between Lord and Jiva is something like that between male and female. So therefore love is the only word which can be properly used. Therefore the term love of Godhead is quite appropriate. And then he mentions that, so another beautiful sentence on Prabhupada's purport is that, he says that transcending material miseries, illusion and fearfulness are practical tests for one who has actually given a submissive hearing to the readings of Srimad Bhagavatam. He says, transcending material miseries, illusion and fearfulness are practical tests for one who has actually given a submissive hearing to the readings of Srimad Bhagavatam. These are some practical tests which we can actually verify. Whether we have given a submissive reception or not, that is determined by how we have overcome these miseries of illusion, lamentation and fearfulness. So, that's another beautiful sentence on Prabhupada's purport. So, we see that in order to reclaim the conditioned souls, Krishna, in one way, as Krishna acts, as Krishna actually punishes the living entity. And another way, Krishna actually reclaims the conditioned soul is that by actually sending a spiritual master or by coming himself or through the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is like, when a person meets with an accident and then he loses his memory. So when he loses his memory, in order to revive the memory, sometimes two kinds of treatments are given to a patient. Shock treatment and sometimes a person is taken to a place which will be by which will be actually reminded of his actually old days. So shock treatment, like sometimes given a severe shock. So that is the shock treatment is compared to how Krishna actually deals with the condition living entity through the material nature by giving different miseries. And another treatment is that a conditioned soul is actually the madman is taken to those places where he has spent a lot of time. He is actually taken to meet those people with whom he has actually spent a lot of time, by which actually his memory will be revived. So similarly, a living entity is also treated by actually exposing himself to this transcendental sound vibrations, which are actually by which our original Krishna consciousness will be awakened, or he is taken to those places, holy places, so that his original consciousness will be awakened. So these are part of the other treatment, stimulus treatment. So next verse. So then the next verse describes, so Vyasadev compiled Srimad Bhagavatam, and the result of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam is described. So just like in this world, any father, if he has something great treasure, he will actually share it with his son. If he has got some valuable knowledge, he will actually share it with his son. He will teach it to his son. The next verse describes how Vyasadev taught the Srimad Bhagavatam Sukadev Goswami, although he was already liberated. Sasamhitam Bhagavatim Kritvanu Kramya Chatmajam Sukam Adhyapayam Asa Nivritti Niratam Munihi. So here it is explained that Sa Samhitam Bhagavatim Kritvanu Kramya Chatmajam. Sukadev Goswami, Vyasadev taught this to Sukadev Goswami, who was already liberated. Nivritti Niratam. Nivritti Niratam means he was actually already liberated. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur gives another interesting point. So the way actually Banu Maharaj translates this verse is that Sa Samhitam Bhagavatim Kritvanu Kramya Chatmajam. So what he says is that Vyasadev, having already made the Srimad Bhagavatam, he revised it and taught it to his son Sukadev Goswami. So what he is saying is that Vyasadev had actually written Srimad Bhagavatam even before actually Narada Muni came. But previously, when he had written Srimad Bhagavatam, he did not give the topmost emphasis to bhakti. So now, after hearing the instructions of Narada Muni, so now he took the same Srimad Bhagavatam which he had written previously, but he revised it and gave the topmost emphasis to bhakti. So that is what he says in his commentary. So Kritvanu Kramya means the Vyasadev revised it and then he taught it to his son Adhyapayam Asa. He taught it to his son Sukadev Goswami. What is the nature of Sukadev Goswami? Nivritti Niratam. Was actually already self-realized, was already liberated. So this is the purport. So now when the sages hear this word Adhyapaya Masa Nivritti Niratam. Vyasadev taught this to Sukadev Goswami, who was Nivritti Niratam, who was already liberated. So that the word Nivritti Niratam triggers the sages to ask the question in the next verse. So the next verse they ask the question. Shaunaka Uvacha Savai Nivritti Nirata Sarvatro Pekshako Munihi Kasya va brhatim yetam atma ramasamabhyasat. So here he is saying that Shukadev Goswami was already fixed in the realization of Brahman, and he was actually indifferent to everything, and moreover he was actually he was self-satisfied, Atma Rama. Then why did he take the trouble to study Srimad Bhagavatam, which is an elaborate work? So when they ask this question, then Suta Goswami answers in the next two verses. So the next verse is a very famous verse. Suta uvacha Atma Ramascha Munayo Nirgranta Api Urukrame Kurvanti Ahaitukim Bhaktim Yittam Bhuta Guno Harihi. So Suta Goswami answers by saying, actually even the Atma Ramas, who are completely self-satisfied and who are Nirgrantha. Nirgrantha means, there are three meanings of the word Nirgrantha, who are actually beyond the scriptural rules and regulations. Or another meaning is that who are already freed from false ego. And another meaning is that those who are freed from scriptures, and those who are freed from the knot of false ego, and thirdly, those who are freed from the bondage of rules and regulations. So Atma Ramascha Munayo Nirgrantha Api Urukrame. So those who are self-satisfied and those who are Nirgrantha, who are actually these three types of people, even such people, they are attracted to performing unalloyed devotional service to the Lord, because the Lord possesses such wonderful qualities. So because of that, the Supreme Lord attracts even the Atma Ramas and Nirgrantha. So Kuruvanti Ahetukim Bhaktim. So Kuruvanti Ahetukim Bhakti means they perform unalloyed devotional service. Means like they perform devotional service without any motive. They just perform devotional service only with the desire to please the Lord. Although they are Atma Ramas, although they are Nirgrantha, because the reason is that Ittam Bhuta Guno Harihi, because the Supreme Lord possesses such wonderful qualities by which he attracts even the Atma Ramas. So Prabhupada in the purport, he gives a elaborate meanings to different words which are used in this verse. Like he gives, for example, seven meanings to the word Atma Rama, seven meanings to the word Munaya, and four meanings to the word Nirgrantha. And he gives four meanings to the word Ni, the suffix to Nirgrantha, the prefix to Nirgrantha. And he gives different meanings for the word Grantha, Urukrama, Kurvanti, and then Ahaitukim, like that. So here we see basically the key point is that how the Supreme Lord possesses such wonderful qualities by which he attracts even the Atma Ramas. And the proof is actually Shukadev Goswami. It is described that in the Brahma Vaivarta Puran, that when Shukadev Goswami was born, he immediately went to the forest because he did not want to get entangled in the material world. He didn't want to get entangled in any mundane affairs. He went to the forest and he was actually meditating on the impersonal Brahman. So then Vyasadeva, in order to make his son Shukadev Goswami get attracted to Srimad Bhagavatam, Vyasadeva sent some of his disciples, some of his followers, and told them to actually to recite some verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam in order to make Shukadeva Goswami attract to Srimad Bhagavatam. So some of the disciples of Vyasadeva, they went and then they chose two verses from the Srimad Bhagavatam. When Shukadeva Goswami heard these two verses, and Shukadeva Goswami became attracted to Srimad Bhagavatam. The first verse which they spoke was, gopis actually describing the beauty of Krishna. Barha pidam natavara vapu karnayo karnikaram bibrat vasha kanaka kapisham vaijayantim chamalam randran venur adara sudaya purayan gopa vrindair vrindaranyam sapadaramanam pravishad gita kirti. That in the 10th canto, in the Venugita section, the gopis, actually when they start speaking about Krishna, they go into trance. But Shukadeva Goswami speaks this verse, but the acharyas explained that the gopis actually made Shukadeva Goswami speak this verse. Shukadeva Goswami speaks the beauty of Krishna. So the actually, you know, of course, all these verses are eternal. So Vyasadeva's disciples recited this particular verse which describes the beauty of Krishna. So this verse describes Barha Pidam, how Krishna is actually decorated with a peacock feather on his head. Barha Pidam Natavara Vapu, Krishna was actually dressed as the best of dancer. Kanaka Kapisham, he was dressed in a dhoti which was like a molten gold, and he was wearing a Vaijayanti garland which was made of five types of flowers. Vaijayantim cha malam bibrat vasak kanaka kapisham vaijayantim cha malam randran venur adara sudaya purayan gopa vrindair. And he was actually filling the holes of this flute with a sound from his lips. And in this way he entered the Vrindavan forest along with his cowherd boyfriends who were actually singing the glories of Krishna. So when he described this particular verse when the disciples of Vyasa described this particular verse describing the beauty of Krishna, Shukadeva Goswami was astonished. And then the next verse the disciples spoke was that Aho Bakiyam Stanakala Kudam Jigam Shayapa Eyadat Abhasadvi Lebe Gatim Dat Uchitam Chatonyam Kamva Dayalam Sharanam Rajayama. That how Krishna is actually so merciful to Putana, who actually came to kill him by actually smearing her breast with a poison. Krishna gave her the position of mother. Usually when you hear about the description of a beautiful person or a powerful person, usually in this world we may think, oh, maybe when we become attracted to a person, you may think that it is very difficult to establish relationship with such a person. But when they spoke the next verse, how Krishna is so merciful that Krishna actually gave the position of mother to the person who actually came to kill him, then Shukadeva Goswami was like completely wonderstruck. How Krishna is so beautiful and how he is so merciful also. So then actually Shukadeva Goswami became a devotee, and then he became attracted to Srimad Bhagavatam. Then he learned Srimad Bhagavatam from Vyasadeva. So this shows that even the Atma Ramas are actually attracted to the qualities of Supreme Lord. And when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu met Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, so when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also explained this particular verse. First he quoted this verse, Atma Ramas Cha Munayu. So then Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, he asked Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to actually explain this verse. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, first you please explain this verse. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya to explain this particular verse. So Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya gave a very scholarly explanation of this particular verse in 9 different ways. Then after Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya explained this verse in 9 different ways, then Mahaprabhu explained this verse in 18 different ways without touching a single explanation of Sarvabhaum Bhattacharya, and in a completely devotional way. after Mahaprabhu explained this verse in 18 different ways, then at that time Sarvam Bhattacharya completely surrendered to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then Mahaprabhu actually showed his Shadbhuj form to Sarvam Bhattacharya. And later, when Sanatan Goswami met Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Varanasi, and Sanatan Goswami asked Mahaprabhu that, "I had heard that you explained the Atmarama verse in 18 different ways. Can you please explain?" In fact, Kaviraj Goswami composes a beautiful verse. He says, "Atma Rameti Padyarkas Artasham Artam Shunya Prakashayan Jagattamo Jaharavyat Sachaitanyo Dayachalaha." All glories to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who acted as the eastern horizon where the sun of the Atmarama verse rose. And he manifested its rays in the form of different meanings and thus eradicated the darkness of the material world. And may the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu protect this universe. So when Sanatana Goswami requested Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Mahaprabhu said, "Actually, I do not remember what I spoke to Sarvam Bhattacharya. Because he is a madman and I am a madman. By the influence of Sarvam Bhattacharya, I spoke something. I do not remember anything what I actually spoke to Sarvam Bhattacharya. But I will try to speak something, and maybe because by the influence of your association, maybe something good will come out from my mouth." And then he starts speaking. And when in the presence of Sanatana Goswami, Mahaprabhu gave such explanations. He gave 61 explanations of this Atmarama verse. Whereas he gave only 18 explanations to Sarvam Bhattacharya. So we see that this is actually glory of this particular verse. And in the 10th canto, Vishnu Chakotakur gives like another explanation of this verse, Atmarama verse. The 10th canto in the Rasa Panchadhyaya. So he says that like Krishna, smiling upon the despondent words from the gopis, the supreme master of all masters of mystic yoga, mercifully enjoyed with the gopis, although he is self-satisfied. So in one way, here it is explained, even the Atmaramas perform devotional service to, unalloyed devotional service to Krishna, because Krishna possesses such transcendental qualities by which even the Atmaramas get attracted. But in the 10th canto, Vishnu Chakotakur says, although Krishna is also an Atmarama, Krishna is the leader of all the Atmaramas, but he performed pastimes, he enjoyed with the gopis, being attracted by the qualities of the gopis. So that means, he says, Krishna derives more pleasure in performing pastimes, in reciprocating with his devotees, than from his own self. So there he says that this shows the transcendental qualities possessed by the gopis, by which even Krishna, who is the supreme Atmarama, gets attracted to the gopis. So then he also quotes some other verses from the 11th canto, where Krishna says that Natada priya, natada me priyatamo, that actually, my dear Uddhava, neither Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Sankarshan, the goddess of fortune, or indeed my own self is dear to me as you are. Saying that even my own self is not as dear to me as you are to me. That means, like, he's saying that I derive more pleasure in your company than from my own self. Similar words he also spoke to Durvasa Muni in the Ambarish Maharaj episode. So this is like another explanation of the Atmarama verse, that how Krishna, the supreme Atmarama, becomes attracted to the qualities of devotees. Next verse. Harer guna kshiptamater bhagavan badarayanihi adyagan mahadakyanam Nityam Vishnujana Priyaha. So here it's explained that Shukadeva Goswami, after hearing from his disciples, he was previously situated in Brahman realization, but his mind became distracted from that by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. He got attracted to Krishna. And then he became dear to all the devotees of the Lord. Nityam Vishnu Janapriyaha. Nityam Vishnu Janapriya means Shukadeva Goswami became dear to all the Vishnu Janas, all the devotees of the Lord. Or another meaning is that all the Vishnu Janas became dear to Shukadeva Goswami. This is what the meaning of the word Vishnu Janapriya. Vaishnavas held him dear, or the Vaishnavas became dear to Shukadeva Goswami. So this is the first section of this particular chapter. So now Suta Goswami begins the narration about Parikshit Maharaj's birth, because in the fourth chapter, the first canto, the sages asked about the Parikshit Maharaj's birth, death and the activities of Parikshit Maharaj. So in order to describe Parikshit Maharaj's birth, death and activities, he is actually talking about the events which are actually leading to the birth of Parikshit Maharaj. So with that purpose, Suta Goswami starts describing the events at the end of the Mahabharata war. Parikshitota Rajarsher Janma Karma Vilapanam Samstamcha Pandu Putranam Vakshe Krishna Katodayam. So now from the next verse onwards, he is actually speaking the events after the Mahabharata war. So the scene is that so Duryodhan, he was actually lying in the deathbed. He was actually lying in the battlefield of Kurukshetra just some moments before his death. So at that time, Ashwatthama comes to meet Duryodhan. So Ashwatthama, previously when Dronacharya was killed in the battle of Kurukshetra, Dronacharya was, how Dronacharya was killed by Drishtadyumna. That time Ashwatthama became very much angry, and then Ashwatthama, he shoots the Narayana Astra towards the Pandavas, and then Krishna told all the Pandavas and all the soldiers to actually bow down, because nobody can actually counteract the Narayana Astra. Only Bhima was fighting, and then because Bhima did not want to bow down, but then somehow Arjuna forced Bhima to actually bow down. So because the rule is that Narayanastra, when somebody is bowing down, so Narayanastra will not actually attack that particular person. Because everyone bowed down and Bhima was fighting, so all the energy of Narayanastra was focused on Bhima, and Bhima's body was getting burnt, but still he was fighting. But somehow Arjuna forced Bhima to actually bow down, and then the Narayanastra came back. So then then Duryodhan told Ashwatthama to release the Narayanastra again. But Ashwatthama said this arrow cannot be released again. So then Ashwatthama releases the Bhargavastra. So when he released the Bhargavastra, so Arjuna actually released Brahmastra and counteract the Bhargavastra. So then Ashwatthama became frustrated, and then he goes away. And then later, Ashwatthama comes on the 18th day of the battle. So when Duryodhan was actually lying in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So at that time, Duryodhan actually, with water, he actually makes Ashwatthama as the commander-in-chief. Practically everyone has been killed, But then he actually makes Ashwatthama the commander in chief, thinking that at least Ashwatthama will kill my enemies. So now Ashwatthama has been made the commander in chief. So that night, so Ashwatthama's was actually, he was he wanted to take revenge against the Pandavas because of the death of his father, who has been killed in a particular manner. So then Ashwatthama, he tells his plans to Kritavarma and Kripacharya, that how he is actually planning to kill the Pandavas when they are actually asleep. Of course, it is described that how he actually meets Lord Shiva, and then Lord Shiva gives a sword, and then he takes that sword. Although Kripacharya and Kritavarma, they discourage Ashwatthama to kill in that particular manner, but Ashwatthama, he was determined. He actually goes to kill the Pandavas when they were asleep. But Krishna knew that the Pandavas were, Ashwatthama would come to kill. So Krishna told the Pandavas to sleep in the battlefield. Usually, like when the Kshatriyas, when they win the battle, it's customary that on that day they are supposed to sleep in the battlefield. So all the Pandavas were sleeping in the battlefield. So Ashwatthama, he actually beheads all the sons of the Pandavas, the five sleeping sons of the Pandavas. So when Ashwatthama beheads, at that time when Arjuna comes to know, Arjuna starts pacifying Draupadi. So here Arjuna is actually, the word used for Arjuna is Kritamali. So Kritamali means, Vishnu Chakravarti says, that one who is having that one who has accepted, because Arjuna accepted many crowns, that's why he is called as Kritamali. Or because Arjuna had a garland in his crown, that's why he is called as Kritamali. So here we see, for instance, in the case of Ashwatthama, his father was killed in a adharmic way. But in order to take revenge against Pandavas, he is also using adharma. So many times in our life, we are treated in an unfair means. But that does not mean that we also actually have to use unfair means to actually counteract others. Like Pandavas were actually mistreated so many times through unfair means, but they always stuck to the path of dharma. But in the case of Ashwatthama, he wanted to use the adharma in order to actually kill the Pandavas. Of course, we see in certain instances the Pandavas also used the adharmic means in order to kill Karna, Drona, etc. But predominantly they only stuck to the path of dharma. So Govindru was telling in a class that Pandavas, they used selfishness for the sake of being selfless servants of the whole world and Krishna. So they used selfishness sometimes for the sake of being selfless servants for the whole world and towards Krishna. But in the case of Bhishma Dev, he used his selflessness in the service of Duryodhan's selfishness. So which is better, to use selfishness for the sake of being a selfless servant of the world, or to use our selflessness in the service of a selfish person? So in the case of the Pandavas, Bhishma Dev was also completely selfless, but he engaged the selflessness to satisfy the selfish desire of Duryodhan. But in the case of the Pandavas, because they were under the guidance of Krishna, Krishna made them sometimes act selfishly for the sake of being selfless servants of the whole world. So, but in general, if you see, Pandavas always stuck to the point of dharma, although they were actually treated in an unfair manner. But here Ashwatthama, he is using unfair means in order to kill the Pandavas. So we'll read from the 17th verse. We'll read from the 16th verse.
Tada shuchaste pramujami badre
yad brahma bandho shira atatayina gandiva muktair vishikair upahare tvakramya yat snasyasi dagda putra. So here actually Arjuna is pacifying Draupadi, telling that you can take your bath after I kill this particular person who has killed your sons, and then after performing the funeral rites you take your bath by standing on the head of Ashwatthama. So then Arjuna actually starts chasing Ashwatthama. Iti priyam valgu vichitra jalpai sa santvayitva chutamitra suta anva dravadam shita ugradanva kapidvajo guruputram ratena. So Burijan Prabhu tells in his class that this is actually the Krishna's entry into the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Krishna enters Srimad Bhagavatam as a chariot driver of Arjuna. Usually, like in a movie or something, it's like the directors, they make how the hero actually enters in the movie, that is actually very important. They try to create such scenes which is like very interesting for the audience. But here Krishna enters the Srimad Bhagavatam as a chariot driver of Arjuna. So then Arjuna starts chasing Ashwatthama. It is described that Ashwatthama was so fearful, and he was running at such great fear, just like Lord Brahma was running out of fear of Lord Shiva. Or another analogy it is given is that, or just like sun god was running out of Lord Shiva, was running out of fear of Lord Shiva. So Prabhupada explains the stories behind this particular episode. Once when Lord Brahma became attracted towards his own daughter, that time Lord Shiva started chasing Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma, being afraid of Lord Shiva, he was running out of great fear. So that is in the same way Ashwatthama was also running out of fear of Arjuna. And another story is that because the last word of this particular verse is like yata kaha. So kaha means actually Lord Brahma. But in certain versions of the Srimad Bhagavatam, instead of yata kaha, the word which is used is yata arka. So if the word arka comes, then arka means actually sun god. In that case, actually, it refers to an incident when sun god was actually running out of fear of Lord Shiva. So the story is that there was a demon called as Vidyumnali, who was a devotee of Lord Shiva. So this devotee, this demon, being empowered by Lord Shiva, he started pursuing the sun on a golden chariot given by Lord Shiva. And because of the effulgence of his chariot, Night disappeared. Then sun god became angry, and sun god actually melted the chariot with his heat and made the chariot fall from the sky. So when Lord Shiva came to that, Lord Shiva became angry because the chariot given by Lord Shiva to his devotee was melted by sun god. So Lord Shiva became angry, and Lord Shiva started chasing sun god. So sun god was actually running out of great fear of Lord Shiva. So it was actually compared to that particular event, the same fear, like Ashwatthama was also running out of fear of Arjuna. So then Ashwatthama, when he understood that there is no one to protect him, and when he understood that his horses were completely exhausted, then he took the ultimate weapon, Brahmastra, and he shot the Brahmastra at Lord Shiva and at Arjuna. So here, the 19th verse, Ashwatthama is called as Dvijatmaja. Dvijatmaja means, Vishnu Chakotaku says that Ashwatthama is short-sighted. Ashwatthama is short-sighted. He was not a far-sighted person. So he shot the Brahmastra. In one sense, we can say Ashwatthama is a person who acted impulsively. So because Ashwatthama did not have connection with Krishna, he acted impulsively. But we see Arjuna, because of his connection with Krishna, he did not act impulsively. He would actually take shelter of Krishna. He would glorify Krishna, would offer prayers to Krishna, and then he would ask Krishna as to what is happening. So the connect, when a person does not have connection with Krishna, a person acts impulsively. And another thing, as Vishnu Chakravarti points out, is that Ashwatthama is actually, he lacks far-sightedness. He is actually short-sighted. In the 10th canto also, in the episode of Krishna teasing Rukmini, Krishna also accuses Rukmini as being short-sighted. So Krishna tells Rukmini, you actually chose me as the husband without giving proper thought. Just being attracted to me in a superficial manner, you accepted me as the husband. So Krishna says that marriage and friendship, they are proper between two people who are equal in terms of their wealth, birth, influence, physical appearance and capacity for good progeny, but never between a superior and an inferior. So you have acted out of ignorance. So Krishna uses the word that vaidarbhi yetad avijnaya tvaya adirga samikshaya. Adirga samikshaya means you are lacking far-sightedness. You acted in a short-sighted manner. And you have made the choice out of ignorance. Avijnaya and adirga samikshaya. So when Rukmini gives a counter-argument, so Rukmini tells a very beautiful verse. Rukmini says, Tvam nyasta danda munibir gaditanu bhava atmatma dasya jagatam itime virtosi hitva bhavat bruva udirita kala vega dvastashi shobja bhavanaka patin kutonye. So one of the arguments Krishna said is that I am actually worshipped by the beggars. Those people who worship me, they are actually poor in nature. So Rukmini is saying, actually, you are the people who worship you, they are not beggars. They are the topmost paramahamsas. Tvam nyasta danda munibir. They are the topmost sannyasis, the topmost paramahamsas. And then Rukmini deals with the point of Krishna, where Krishna accused Rukmini as being adirga samikshaya, as being short-sighted. So for that, Rukmini says, Hitva bhavat bruva udirita kala vega. Rukmini says, I chose you as my husband after rejecting Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva and the rulers of heaven because their aspirations are frustrated by the force of time, which is actually born from your eyebrows. Which is born from your eyebrows. So what interest could I have in any other suitors? So Hridayan Maharaj writes a very beautiful purport. He says that actually you are saying that I acted out of short-sightedness. But actually I chose you as a husband after making an exhaustive universal appraisal. After making an exhaustive universal appraisal of all the controllers in the whole universe, of Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, all the demigods in the heaven, then after making this appraisal, then I chose you as the husband. So Rukmini says to Krishna, actually, you are accusing me that I lack farsightedness, but actually you did not, this indicates that your accusation that I lack farsightedness indicates that you did not know of my deep insight into the situation. Actually, you are not aware of my deep insight into the situation. In this way, Rukmini is actually counter-accusing Krishna. So here, exactly on the contrary, that Ashwatthama is acting impulsively without seeing the consequences of releasing this most powerful weapon. So then, when Arjuna sees this powerful heat generated from this Brahmastra, he couldn't understand what was happening. Then he actually glorifies Krishna. So from 22 to 25th verse, in four verses, Arjuna glorifies Krishna, and then in the 26th verse, he asks the question to Krishna as to what is actually happening. So we'll recite from 22nd to 25th verse. Krishna Krishna Mahabaho Bhaktanam Abhayankara Twameko Dahyamananam Apavargosi Samsmrite. So, like, just before going to this verse, like, if you see the character of Ashwatthama, so we can relate the character of Ashwatthama even with the modern scientists. So, some months back when Devamrita Maharaj came, he was actually giving a class. He was mentioning that, he was talking about this point, how the human beings, we have got we might have evolved with the advancement of the technology, but although we have got superior technology, but we do not have proper discretion. As there is a famous quote of one Western thinker who mentions that we have guided missiles but misguided men. Guided missiles and misguided men. So there is no internal development. So it is actually even acknowledged by the scholars, he mentioned that intelligent people, they actually understand that scientific advancement is not leading to advancement, but it is actually degrading the earth. Because people who use the technology have got bad character. So people are able to, recognize that people who are using the technology, they have bad character. So therefore, it is actually scientific advancement is actually degrading people, degrading society. So then he said, so there was he was quoting some scientists, he was mentioning that some researchers, they were feeling, so how can we rectify the situation? How can the people who have the technology, how to make sure that they don't use the technology for the wrong purpose? So the scientists, they came up with a solution. So they came up with a solution called as they start off inventing what is called as biochemical moral enhancers. Biochemical moral enhancers. That means by using certain chemicals that will actually, By that, the people who use the technology will use the technology for the right purpose. So they will, those chemicals will give right moral principle to the people, so they will not misuse the technology. So by injecting certain chemicals. They ruled out the option of religion because they felt, religion is of no use. So they feel that, only option is biochemical moral enhancers. But still, that may not be the best solution. But they felt that, although they know that this may not be the best solution, but it's the only solution available, according to them. This proposed by certain Oxford scholars. And the same scholars who proposed this solution of biochemical moral enhancers, they also admit that there is a risk involved in that. And the risk involved in that is that the people who developed and supervise it are probably the people who most need it. Means like the people who develop this moral, biochemical moral enhancers and who supervise it, they are the people who actually most need it. So that means the point is that like we may invent a technology, but when it is in the hands of wrong people, even if we invent some technology so that we make the right decision, but the people who actually invent the technology, they are also having the bad character, then how can they actually, they will use it for the right purpose. So Ashwatthama had the greatest weapon, but because he did not have the right character, he used it for the wrong purpose. So now Arjuna is speaking this verse. So Arjuna is glorifying Krishna, O bestower of fearlessness in your devotees, you alone are the deliverer of all those who are burning in the fire of material existence. So here Prabhupada writes in the purport that Arjuna's words are authoritative because Arjuna had already experienced the transcendental attributes of Krishna during the Kurukshetra war. So Arjuna is saying only you can actually award fearlessness. So Arjuna is actually has experienced Krishna's transcendental attributes. So one is, we see that we have the words of the Shabda, the scriptures, and when that Shabda is actually confirmed by our direct experience, Pratyaksha, then the faith in Shabda becomes even more strong. So Arjuna's words are not simply authoritative theoretical words, he also had personal experience of it. So when the Shabda is confirmed by Pratyaksha, then then the faith in Shabda becomes more strong. So even the 10th canto, when Krishna was there in the womb of Devaki, when the demigods come to offer prayers, so in one of the particular prayer, there is a beautiful conversation where Krishna is telling to the demigods, you are telling that my body is made of pure sattva gun, is made of shuddha sattva. But there are many people in this world who consider that my body is made of material sattva gun, that my body is actually material in nature. Then the demigods say in response that actually your body cannot be material. It has to be spiritual, because they give two reasons. The first reason they say is that if your body were to be made of sattva gun, there would be absence of the devotees realizing your spiritual form. There would be absence of the devotees experiencing bliss from the presence of your spiritual form. And the second reason they say is that your body cannot be material, it has to be spiritual, because of the appearance of you, because of being close to your form, because of your grace appearing in our minds, we are experiencing so much a bliss. So therefore, we must conclude that your form is not material. So what they are saying is that they are quoting the experience of previous devotees, because they have experienced bliss by realizing your form, so therefore your form cannot be material. So in one sense, the scriptures are nothing but it contains the experience or the authoritative statements which are the experience of the previous devotees. And the demigods are also quoting their own experience, because we are also able to experience spiritual bliss which is manifesting because of your grace, so therefore your form cannot be material. So in the same way, Arjuna is actually glorifying Krishna. He's not glorifying Krishna simply based on the scriptures, but he is also having personal experience of Krishna's protection. So next verse. Tvamadhya purushas sakshat ishvara prakrite paraha mayam yudasya chikshaktya kaivalye stita atmani. So here Krishna, Arjuna says, you are the original person, Adya Purusha, and you are the controller. You are actually beyond the three modes of material nature, Prakriti Paraha. Mayam Yudasya Chit Shaktya. So Vishnu Chakotaku says, it means that you are situated in your spiritual form, being one with your spiritual energy and separate from the material energy. Our Prabhupada writes that, you cast away the effects of material energy by your internal energy. Next verse. Sayeva jiva lokasya maya mohita chetasaha vidatse svena viryena shreyo dharmadi lakshanam. The previous verse, Arjuna glorified Krishna as Prakriti Paraha. Now he says, although you are beyond the modes of material nature, although you are actually non-different from your spiritual energy, Chit Shakti, but still you benefit the living entity who are bewildered by the illusory energy, Jiva Mohita Chetasaha. How do you benefit? By teaching them, or like by giving them dharma, artha and kama. Or Prabhupada mentions, by actually you benefit them by executing the four principles of religion for the ultimate benefit of the conditioned souls. Next verse. Tatadyam chatvataraste bhuvo bharajihirshaya Swanam Chananya Bhavanam Anudhyanaya Chasakrit.
Does your descent as an incarnation to remove the burden of the world and to benefit your friends, especially those who are your exclusive devotees and are wrapped in meditation upon you?
So then he mentions that not only you actually you benefit the living entity by actually giving them the results of dharma, artha and kama, but you also descend in different incarnations to relieve the burden of the earth, Bara Jihirshaya, and Swanam Chananya Bhavanam, and in order to give happiness to your unallied devotees, Anudhyanaya Chasakrit, by letting them worship you. So now after glorifying Krishna in this way, then the next verse Arjuna actually asks the question as to, like, what is this, why is this dangerous effulgence which is spreading in all the ways, all the directions. So Prabhupada writes in the purport that actually Arjuna is a friend of Krishna, and moreover it is an emergency situation. Even in an emergency situation, and although Arjuna is a friend of Krishna, first Arjuna glorifies Krishna and then he actually puts forward his request. If Arjuna can follow this etiquette, even in an emergency situation, and although he is a friend of Krishna, then how much more it applies to us that when we go in front of the Supreme Lord, it is important to follow this etiquette of first glorifying the Lord before actually putting forward our petition. So that is a point which Prabhupada mentions. So then Krishna actually replies in the next two verses. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Vetedam Drona Putrasya Brahman Astram Pradarshitam Naivaso Veda Samharam Pranabhada Upasthite.
He has helplessly done this. He is afraid of
So 27th and 28th verse, Krishna actually replies. Krishna says that this, first he actually tells that, don't you know that what is happening? You have actually seen so many weapons. Then Arjuna says that actually I am not able to recognize what is this weapon. Then Krishna says that actually this weapon has been released by Ashwatthama. He has released the Brahmastra. So, but he does not know how to actually retract the Brahmastra. So Madhvacharya, in his Mahabharata Tatparya Nirnaya, he actually quotes this particular incident, and he tells that what was the reason that Ashwatthama could not actually retract the Brahmastra. So he tells, I heard from Goindra's class, he was saying that in the case of Ashwatthama, when he met actually the Duryodhan, Duryodhan told Ashwatthama that actually when Ashwatthama comes to meet Duryodhan with the five sleeping sons of the Pandavas, so initially Duryodhan was actually joyful, thinking that maybe all his enemies are killed. But later when he actually realizes these are the sons of the Pandavas, he becomes dissatisfied, he becomes sorrow, because he felt that the whole Kuru dynasty has been vanquished. So at that time, I think Dronacharya tells Ashwatthama, you actually procreate through my wife and you continue the Kuru dynasty. So that time Ashwatthama agrees to actually Duryodhan's proposal for a moment. Mentally he agrees for that, accepts it. So because Ashwatthama mentally agreed to that proposal, so Madhvacharya says that he did not have the power to actually take back the Brahmastra. But in the case of Arjuna, when Urvashi actually proposed, then he quotes this incident, how when Urvashi proposed Arjuna to actually enjoy with her, but Arjuna actually rejected the proposal of Urvashi, considering Urvashi as the mother, because Arjuna had such superior level of sense control, he did not even agree to it in the mind also. So therefore, because Arjuna had such strong level of sense control, he had the power to actually even counteract the, retract the Brahmastra. So he tells this point to tell, he tells these two incidents to show that how when a person actually exhibits sense control, restraint, then a person has greater power. A person has greater power. So we see this particular point that in one sense it is easy to release the power, it is easy to speak, it is easy to actually, in one sense, speak eloquently, or it is easy to attack others, but it is more difficult is to actually restrain ourselves. It is more difficult is to actually restrain ourselves. Gaurang Prabhu was telling in the class, to speak, to get training to become a speaker, it is not so difficult. But more difficult is to actually to restrain our speech, that is actually more difficult. Even in the Krishna teasing Rukmini in that episode, Krishna at the end, actually Krishna tells Rukmini, actually if you see that whole chapter, Rukmini, Krishna told so many reasons to Rukmini for why Rukmini made a wrong choice in accepting him as husband. And then Rukmini, point by point, Rukmini gives a counter argument for all the points of Krishna, like an expert lawyer. And then at the end, when Krishna becomes pleased with Rukmini, Krishna speaks certain verses. In one of the verses, Krishna tells Rukmini, he says that I was very captivated by you when, he mentioned that when Balramji killed Rukmi, I think he quotes that incident, or when Krishna actually insulted Rukmi, one of the incident he quotes. When Balramji killed Rukmi, that time you did not even speak a single word. you completely remained silent because you felt that, oh, if I speak something, maybe Krishna will actually leave me and I will lose association of Krishna. I will lose. Rukmini was thinking like that. So out of fear that you actually completely remained quiet, you did not speak anything. So that silence of yours completely conquered me. So Krishna says that. So in one sense, why I am quoting is that definitely Rukmini, we see both the qualities of Rukmini. Rukmini was expert in giving different arguments to Krishna as to how she made the right choice. And Rukmini was also showed her quality in actually restraining herself when she was not supposed to speak. And Krishna was actually conquered by that quality of Rukmini. So that is why it is said, like, pure devotees are expert in fast bike race and slow bike race. Like there is like fast bike race and slow bike race. Like sometimes in a college I have seen that. There is fast bike race is there. Like one may win in the fast bike race, but more difficult is to actually win in the slow bike race. Like slow bike race means you have to actually, you have one who comes last, he is given the first prize. But the condition is that you cannot actually keep your foot on the ground, something like that. There are conditions. But it is more difficult to win in the slow bike race because by nature we want to actually go fast, we want to actually we want to speak, we want to actually exhibit our power. But it's more difficult to actually restrain ourselves to go slowly or to exhibit the sense control. So the pure devotees, they are actually just like Rukmini, they are expert in fast bike race and also in slow bike race. So because Arjuna had restrained himself when Urvashi proposed that to Arjuna, so Arjuna had the power to actually even retract the Brahmastra, according to Madhvacharya. But because Ashwatthama mentally agreed to the proposal of Duryodhan, so Ashwatthama did not have the power to actually retract the Brahmastra. So we'll go a little fast. So then Lord, actually, when Krishna replies to Arjuna, then Arjuna, which verse? So 27 and 28, Krishna speaks to Arjuna. And then from 29th to 31st verse, these three verses describe the combined power of two Brahmastras. So Krishna first tells Arjuna to release one Brahmastra, and then Krishna tells Arjuna to actually retract both the Brahmastras. So Arjuna shoots the Brahmastra. And the 30th verse describes the combined power of the two Brahmastras. And then it is described that the heat generated by the two Brahmastras, it was compared to the fire emanating from the Sankarshan's mouth at the time of final destruction, together with the fires of both weapons combined together, like the sun in the sky and the fire emanating from the Sankarshan's mouth at the time of final destruction. So it was actually compared to the fire from the Sankarshan's mouth plus the sun planet, fire from the sun planet. And this fire was actually spreading in all directions, covering heaven, earth and the space between. So Prabhupada gives a detailed purport comparing the Brahmastra with a modern nuclear weapon. He says, like, both work on total combustibility, but Brahmastra is a subtle type of weapon, and whereas the nuclear weapon is a gross weapon. And Brahmastra can be actually expert in military science could counteract the Brahmastra, but nuclear weapon cannot be neutralized by another weapon. And Brahmastra can be pinpointed to a particular target, but nuclear weapon cannot be pinpointed to a particular target. And Brahmastra can destroy the whole cosmic situation, but nuclear weapon can at most blow up only one globe. And another difference which is not mentioned in the purport is that all the Brahmastra or for that matter any weapon, like any of these Vedic weapons, they are obtained by worshipping a superior personality, by worshipping a demigod or the supreme lord. But the modern nuclear weapons, modern weapons, they are not obtained by worshipping a superior personality. They are actually invented by their own brains. So therefore, it causes so much of actually environmental destruction also. Whereas the Vedic weapons, because they are obtained by worshipping a superior personality, they do not cause unnecessary environmental destruction. They have much superior powers. So then Arjuna retracted both the Brahmastras as Krishna desired. So Prabhupada writes that the atomic bomb explosion, like people say that atomic bomb explosion can annihilate the whole world, it is actually only a childish imagination. Because the destruction, creation and destruction, they happen according to the laws of the Supreme Lord. But it is not the time of destruction, so therefore Arjuna could actually withdraw both the Brahmastras. So then it is described that Arjuna's eyes were red like the balls of copper, and then he bound Ashwatthama like an animal. And whereas Krishna was also angry, but Krishna's eyes were compared to the lotus flower. So Prabhupada says that Krishna's anger and Arjuna's anger are not on the same level. Krishna's anger is on the transcendental plane. But he doesn't specifically mention that Arjuna's anger is on the material plane, but he just mentioned that it's not on the same level. So in reference to Krishna's anger, he mentions that Krishna's anger is transcendental in the sense that whoever becomes the object of Krishna's anger, he gets benefited by Krishna's anger. So then, from 35th to 39th verse, in 5 verses, Krishna instructs to Arjuna. Krishna instructs Arjuna as to what he should do with Ashwatthama. So, I will tell briefly as to what actually Krishna tells Arjuna. So, first actually, Krishna tells Arjuna that you should not release this Brahma Bandhu because he has killed sleeping children at the night time. So, therefore, you must kill him immediately. Then, in the 36th verse, Krishna actually quotes the scriptural principle or the code of dharma which actually Ashwatthama has broken. So we'll recite the 36th verse. Mattam pramattam unmattam suptam balam sriyam jadam prapannam viratam beetam naripum hanti dharma vit. So here it is described that a dharma with one who is a knower of dharma will never kill a person who is mad or who is sleeping or who is inattentive or who is drunkard, who is without a chariot, who is immobilized, one who is surrendered. So here Prabhupada writes in the purport that formerly war was never declared by whims of selfish political leaders. It was carried out on religious principles free from vices. Violence carried out on religious principles is far superior to so-called non-violence. It is far superior to so-called non-violence. So then the next verse, Krishna says, you must kill Ashwatthama for his own well-being. Because you must kill Ashwatthama for his own well-being. Otherwise, if you don't kill him, he will go to hellish situation. He will go to hellish planets. So here again Prabhupada writes a very elaborate purport. I will summarize this purport. The 37th verse first. So Prabhupada first talks about the principle of life for life. Because Ashwatthama has taken the life of these 5 your sleeping sons, therefore you must take his life. So Prabhupada gives 4 reasons supporting this principle of life for life. The first reason is that when you kill him, it saves him from going to hell. When you kill a murderer, it saves him from going to hell. And second reason is that it is actually good for the culprit, because in the next life he will not have to suffer for the act of murder. And the third point he mentions is that it is the most lenient stance towards the murderer. Like giving the capital punishment to the murderer is the most lenient stance. And the fourth reason he mentions is that it will actually help the murderer. By killing the murderer, it will help him to advance. So much so, he mentioned that such a murderer may become eligible for promotion to heaven. So we can see how the present day politicians are completely unaware of this. Like recently, like some rape cases happened in UP. Like one politician, he made such an irresponsible statement. Sometimes the rapes are all right. Some cases it is right. Some cases it is wrong. He made such a vague statement actually. So, but here Prabhupada is talking about how life for life. And then he talks about this concept of murder. It also applies to the murder of an animal. Killing of an animal, he should also be treated in the same fashion. So then he talks about 6 points about the ill effects of animal killing. The first point he mentions is that animal killer is considered a murderer because animal food is not meant for human being. And the second point he mentions is that everyone who takes part in the animal killing, he also takes part in the sinful reaction. And the third point he mentions is that only one who has the created life, he has the right to actually kill the person, kill the living entity. So therefore, one doesn't have the right to kill an animal. And the fourth point, he talks about the purpose of animal sacrifice. The scriptures have actually talked about animal sacrifices that is given in the manner of concession, and scriptures are not recommending animal killing. So there is a difference between concession and recommendation. The scriptures are given animal sacrifice as a concession and not as a recommendation. Not to encourage people to open slaughterhouses. Not to encourage people. And the fifth point he mentions is that the benefit of animal sacrifice is that it is good for the animal, because the animal will get a human body, and it is good for an animal eater because he is saved from the grossest type of sins. And the sixth point he mentions is that because of animal killing, there is so much of war and pestilence and so many famine and so many diseases, etc. So in this way, Krishna tells in this verse, you must kill Ashwatthama for his own well-being. And then in the 38th verse, Krishna says, and Krishna gives another reason to Arjuna why he should actually kill Ashwatthama. He says that because I personally heard you promise to Draupadi that you will kill Ashwatthama, therefore you must kill Ashwatthama. And then finally, Krishna concludes in the 39th verse by saying, this Ashwatthama is a sinful person, he is sinful, and he is an aggressor, atatai, and he is a killer of your relatives, and he disgraced your family, Kulapamsana, and moreover, he has displeased Duryodhan, he has displeased his master, so therefore he should be killed. So in this way, Krishna has given different reasons to Arjuna that he should actually kill Ashwatthama till 39th verse. So now, we'll recite the 40th verse. Evam parikshata dharmam partha krishnena choditah naichyadhantum gurusutam yadyap atmahanam mahan. So here it is described, evam parikshata dharmam. Evam parikshata dharmam means actually Krishna was examining Arjuna in his sense of justice. by telling Arjuna to kill the son of his own guru. But Arjuna, being a great soul, although Krishna told him to actually kill, but Arjuna did not want to kill Ashwatthama. So Vishnu Chakra Thakur writes an elaborate purport. So I'll discuss in briefly. So here, basically, Krishna is testing Arjuna's sense of duty, justice. So exams are definitely required, because exams, they actually tell us how much we have actually learned the lesson. So one is like theoretical exam. Of course, the real exams are the life situations where the principles we have learned in the life, they are tested as to how we can actually, whether we are actually know how to apply those principles. So exams are important. So Krishna is testing Arjuna. So here Vishnu Chakra Thakur says, like many places in the Bhagavatam, Krishna and his devotees have actually tested. Krishna and his devotees have tested other devotees. So he quotes that like Krishna tested the gopis three times. The first time is when the gopis, when they came to meet Krishna before the Ras Leela, Krishna told the gopis to actually to go back by telling them to actually, you should actually serve the husbands, you should actually, that is your dharma. So Krishna was testing the gopis. And Krishna tested the gopis through Uddhava by telling the gopis through Uddhava to meditate on the super soul. And third time Krishna tested the gopis was when Krishna met the gopis in the Kurukshetra, and Krishna directly told the gopis to actually meditate on the all-pervading super soul. I am the beginning and end of all created beings, and I exist both within and without them, so you should actually meditate upon me. Then they say Krishna tested the gopis. And other places where the Lord tested the gopis is that Lord Vishnu tested Prithu Maharaj. Lord Vishnu told Prithu Maharaj, Varamcha Matkan Chana Mana Vendra Vrinishva Teham Gunashila Yantritai. I am captivated by your wonderful behavior, that you please ask whatever you want, I will actually give whatever benediction you want. But Prithu Maharaj, he actually passed the test. He ultimately said, actually, you only choose what benediction you want to give to me. Just like the father knows what is best for the child, you know what is best for me, and you only choose whatever is best for me. And Narsingadev tested Prahlad Maharaj by saying, I want to give you some benediction, please ask me. And Prahlad Maharaj also passed the test. And even the Lord's representative, Shukadev Goswami, also tested Parikshit Maharaj. So Shukadev Goswami tested three times Parikshit Maharaj in the Bhagavatam. The first time, in the beginning of sixth canto, Shukadev Goswami tested Parikshit Maharaj's intelligence by first actually giving the Karmakanda solution. When Parikshit Maharaj asked the question, how can the people of hellish planets be delivered? And then he gave the Jnanakanda solution, finally gave Bhakti Yoga. And second time, Shukadev Goswami tested Parikshit Maharaj at the end of the ninth canto by describing whole Krishna Leela in just in few verses. And third time, Shukadev Goswami tested Parikshit Maharaj at the end, in the 12th canto, by telling him to meditate upon impersonal Brahman. The second time he tested his eagerness, and third time Shukadev Goswami tested his steadiness. So in this way, the Supreme Lord and his devotees actually test their subordinates. So now, first he tested his intelligence. That when Parikshit Maharaj asked, how can the people of hellish planets be delivered? So first gave Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, and that. So now from the 41st verse, so now in the 41st verse describes that Arjuna actually entrusted Ashwatthama to Draupadi. So it is described, Govinda Priya Sarathi. Arjuna, whose friend and driver was Krishna, entrusted Ashwatthama unto Draupadi. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, everyone can enjoy the company of the Lord in the spiritual realm if he at all desires and sincerely tries for it by bhakti yoga. So in the previous verse, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes a beautiful one line in the purport, the 40th verse purport, because although Krishna is telling Arjuna to kill Ashwatthama, but his internal mood is that he wants to test Arjuna's sense of duty. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, the real meaning is not always in the directly observed events. When the directly observed event is that Krishna is telling Arjuna to kill Ashwatthama. But what is the real meaning? Krishna is testing Arjuna in his sense of justice. So the real meaning is not always in the directly observed events. So that is why scriptures are not textual, but scriptures should not be understood in a textual manner, in a literal manner. When we understand the scriptures, we have to understand the feeling behind the people who are speaking the different statements. So although Krishna is literally speaking something, but the feeling behind Krishna speaking those words is that he is actually testing Arjuna in a sense of justice. So we have to understand that. So the Western way of reading the scriptures is actually reading the scriptures literally. But the proper way of reading scriptures is actually understanding the context of the scriptures and understanding the feeling of the people who are speaking the different words. Now from 42nd to 48th verse, Draupadi gives different arguments for why Ashwatthama should be released. So I will summarize the different words spoken by Draupadi. So first thing, Draupadi says that as soon as Draupadi sees Ashwatthama being bound like an animal, Draupadi looks at Ashwatthama with great compassion. Seeing that actually Ashwatthama is the son of a guru, not only she is looking at with great compassion, Draupadi offers obeisances to Ashwatthama, offers respects to Ashwatthama. So we will just highlight different points of Prabhupada's purport. This is the most important section of this chapter, one of the important section. So if we see, when we actually analyze Draupadi's character in this section, we can take lessons from Draupadi on three different levels. We can see Draupadi from the point of view of a Vaishnavi. From the point of view of a Vaishnavi, Draupadi, she is telling Arjuna not to kill Ashwatthama, who is the actually killer of her own sons. Before we go to that, if we compare Draupadi with Gandhari, Gandhari was also such a one of the chaste ladies. But Gandhari, when her 100 sons were killed in the battlefield, like when it should be actually a cause of joy in one sense. When the Kshatriyas are killed in the battlefield, it is actually a cause of joy. It should be the cause of joy. But Draupadi and Gandhari, although her 100 sons were killed in the battlefield, she became angry with Krishna and she cursed Krishna. But in the case of Draupadi, her 5 sons were killed not in the battlefield, but when they were actually asleep. But still, actually, Draupadi is actually does not become angry with Ashwatthama. She does not actually curse the Supreme Lord, but she is actually showing. She is telling Arjuna to actually release Ashwatthama and not to kill Ashwatthama. So this is actually the character of Draupadi, that as Krishna explained, that Adveshta Sarva Bhutanam Maitraha Karuna Evacha, that a devotee does not hate anybody. On the other hand, he is actually a kind friend of others. Maitra Karuna Evacha, not only is a kind friend, he is actually a he is actually compassionate. He shows mercy towards others. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes in the purports, Maitra Adveshta Sarva Bhutana. He is actually a kind friend and merciful towards all living entities. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur writes in the purport, a devotee not only does not hate anybody, he does not hate even a person who hates him. Because out of all the people, out of all the people to not hate is the most difficult person to not hate is the person who hates us. So in the case of here we see Draupadi, she does not hate even the person who has actually killed her 5 sleeping sons. So we can see on this level the character of Draupadi as a Vaishnavi or a Vaishnava, how she is actually forgiving in her nature. So this is one level. On another level we see Draupadi's character is that Draupadi is just acting like a mother. Because Draupadi, other reason she gives is that if you kill Ashwatthama, I can understand, I can feel the pain of Kripi. Because I have lost the 5 sons. If you kill Ashwatthama, Kripi will also suffer the same pain which I am going through. I can feel that pain. So therefore, you please actually don't kill Ashwatthama. So she is just... that means like her motherly nature is actually brought out. She's actually putting herself in the shoes of Kripi, and her motherly nature is also seen. Actually, this point was actually highlighted by Radhana Swami Maharaj in the class. He mentioned that one level Draupadi is acting like a Vaishnavi, another level Draupadi is acting like a mother. She wants to actually forgive Ashwatthama. She understands the pain of Kripi, another mother. So here we can see that especially in the modern world, the Western culture, Western culture make women not to play the role of mother. Western culture bombards with such images and movies and different advertisements that they are not inspired to play the role of mother. If you go to any school and ask the students studying in the school, if you ask the girls, like, what do you want to become? I'm sure like most of them would say, I want to become a doctor or engineer or IAS or IPS or journalist. Nobody would want to say that I want to become a mother or a housewife or something. So that is because that is the influence of the actually Western culture. So, but here we see Draupadi just playing the natural role of a mother. So these are actually the positive lessons from Draupadi. But on the third level, when we see Draupadi from the point of view of a person giving justice, so there Draupadi is acting in a sentimental fashion without properly discriminating. So as a Vaishnava, we can take lesson of forgiveness from Draupadi. And from the Varnashram point of view, we can learn how Draupadi is exactly following the same role which is supposed to follow. She is playing the role of a mother. So Western culture means, one of the main influence of Western culture is that Western culture makes a person follow somebody else's role. Instead of doing our own natural duty, they make a person follow somebody else's duty. So we can learn Draupadi just following the role of a mother. And the third lesson is that how Draupadi is sentimental, that she is not right in doing the giving proper justice. So that's what Prabhupada writes in the purport about Vama Swabhava. So Prabhupada says that women are no better than boys and so have no discriminatory power like that of a man. So Ashwatthama was condemned by the greatest authority Krishna, yet Draupadi as a mild woman could not withdraw her natural courtesy for a Brahmana. Then Prabhupada says, a good man or a woman accepts anything very easily, but a man of average intelligence does not do so. We should not give up our reason and discrimination just to be gentle. We should not give up our reason and discrimination just to be gentle. So then Prabhupada explains, do not follow the mild nature of a woman and accept that which is not genuine. So one should be actually simple at heart, but one should not be a simpleton. So Chanakya Pandit says that Natyantam Saralena Bhavyam Gatva Pashya Vanastalim. So Chanakya Pandit says a man should be simple hearted and straight mannered, but one should not be a simpleton. Because otherwise he will be, if he is a simpleton, he will be exploited by people for his generosity. So therefore one should never be too simple. So he gives an example. When a person goes to a jungle, one beholds that the simple and straight trees have been cut. But those trees which grow in a haphazard manner, they have been spared. So if a person is too simple, I mean, that is like compared to a straight trees, they will be cut. His generosity will be exploited. So one should not be too simple. So that's what Prabhupada explained, that we should not give up our reason and discrimination just to be gentle. So then in the 43rd verse it is described, Draupadi says to Arjuna that release him because a Brahmana is always our guru. So Brahmana is always our guru. Here again Prabhupada explains that one should accept a Brahmana on the merit of his qualification and not on the basis of simply being son of a Brahmana. So these different verses, in these different verses, different qualities of Draupadi are actually exhibited. So Vishnu Chakravarti explains, in the 43rd verse, Draupadi's quality of being faithful to Dharma is exhibited. Being faithful to Dharma, that quality is exhibited by Draupadi in this particular verse. So Prabhupada says that a devotee can tolerate all sorts of tribulation personally, but still such devotees are never unkind to others, even to the enemy. To a good lady like Draupadi, the matter was considered not from Shastric vision, but as a matter of custom. Then in the 44th verse, Draupadi says that actually you are able to withdraw the Brahmastra because you learnt this art from Dronacharya. So you must be grateful to Dronacharya, and that Dronacharya is standing in front of you in the form of his son. In the form of his son Ashwatthama. And then he says, moreover, Kripi, because Kripi did not undergo sati because of the presence of Ashwatthama. So if you kill Ashwatthama, so then Kripi will remain unprotected. So this is the Draupadi tells in 44th and 45th verse. So here in the 44th verse, Draupadi is telling Arjuna to be grateful to Dronacharya, who actually taught him the Brahmastra. So here in the 44th verse, Draupadi's quality of being reasonable is exhibited. She is telling that, oh, you should be actually reasonable. You learned this from Dronacharya, so how can you actually kill Ashwatthama? And the 45th verse, Draupadi's quality of being full of mercy, Sa Karunam, that quality is exhibited because she is actually feeling for the suffering of Kripi. That you cannot actually inflict suffering upon Kripi by killing Ashwatthama. Then in the 46th verse, Draupadi says that you should not cause suffering to the family of your guru because they are always praiseworthy and worthy of worship. So causing grief to glorious family members who are respectable is adharma, and it will give you grief. So in the 46th verse, Draupadi's quality of nirvyalikam, that is exhibited. Nirvyalikam means Draupadi did not have a desire to harm others. So this quality of not having the desire to harm others, that is exhibited by Draupadi. And then in the 47th verse, Draupadi says, don't make Kripi cry like me. Don't make Kripi cry like me. So here, Draupadi's quality of sense of calmness, the particular word is that sense of calmness that is exhibited. So this is Vishnu Chakravarti's purport. So do not make Kripi cry like me. So Draupadi spoke this both from the point of view of motherly feelings and from the respectable position held by the wife of Dronacharya. And then in the 48th verse, Draupadi says finally, if you actually kill Ashwatthama, the whole Brahmana community will become angry with the Kshatriyas, and the Brahmana community, by their anger, they can destroy the Kshatriyas. So therefore, you should not actually kill Brahmanas. So here Draupadi's quality of generosity or desiring to benefit the hearer, desiring to benefit the generosity, say, like, I don't know exactly how to say, exhibited. Her harsh words expressed generosity, desiring to benefit the hearer. That means the angry Brahmanas will destroy the Kshatriyas. So that's just to actually shave the Kshatriya dynasty, you should not actually kill the Brahmanas. In this way, Vishnu Chakravarti says that Draupadi exhibited six qualities in actually telling different things to in telling Arjuna not to kill Ashwatthama. Now, I will summarize the six qualities of Draupadi. The six qualities exhibited with Draupadi were, first is her faithful to Dharma, that is exhibited in the 43rd verse. And the 44th verse, she exhibited the quality of being reasonable. And the 45th verse, she exhibited the quality of being full of mercy, Sa Karunam. And then the 46th verse, she exhibited the quality of the not having the desire to harm others, Nirvyalikam. And the 47th verse, she exhibited the quality of being sense of calmness, do not make her cry like me. And 48th verse, she exhibited the quality of generosity. So when Draupadi spoke these words, Yudhishthira Maharaj appreciated the words of Draupadi. So basically, all these six qualities exhibited by Draupadi, they are described in the 49th verse. Dharmyam Nyayam Sa Karunam Nirvyalikam Samam Mahat Raja Dharma Suto Ragya Pratyanandat Vachodvija. So Yudhishthira Maharaj agreed with Draupadi's words. And then Nakula and Sahadev, they also agreed with Draupadi's words. But then Bhima spoke in the 51st verse. Bhima told Arjuna, you must actually kill Ashwatthama. He has killed sleeping children without purpose, without benefit to his master or to himself. So he should be killed. So then, when Krishna saw that different people, Bhima is having some opinion, Draupadi is having different opinion, Krishna manifested four hands and pacified both the parties. He pacified Bhima and also pacified Draupadi and Yudhishthira Maharaj, etc. And Krishna smilingly spoke to Arjuna. Now from 53rd verse, in 53rd and 54th verse, Krishna speaks to Arjuna. So Krishna says, you must follow the scriptures. Scriptures tell that aggressor should be killed, and scriptures also tell a Brahmana should not be killed. And you must also fulfill your promise to Draupadi, and you must also please Bhima and Yudhishthira Maharaj, and you must also please me. So in this way, Krishna is actually telling to Arjuna. So then the decision which Arjuna makes, as you know, that Arjuna actually removes the jewel of Ashwatthama and then he gives a shave to Ashwatthama. So here, finally we come to this point of the lesson is that, so there are different situations which you actually come across in our life. So sometimes we actually go through what is called as moral crisis. Moral crisis means we have to make a decision between doing right and wrong. Maybe like taking intoxication, not taking intoxication, or speaking a lie or speaking a truth. So moral crisis is actually, in one sense, it is easy to make the right choice because it is like black and white. Right and wrong, we have to make a choice. So it is easy to make the right choice. The to make the right choice, the main thing which is required to make the right choice in a moral crisis is that determination and willpower. It is not difficult to understand what is right and what is wrong. What we need is determination and willpower. By that we can understand, oh, this is the choice we have to make. By that we can act upon that right choice. But there is something called as ethical crisis. In an ethical crisis, we have to choose between two things, both appear to be right. In an ethical crisis, we have to understand what is the higher religious principle and what is the lower religious principles. Because both the choices appear to be right. Like, for example, like there are two choices, both may appear to be right. Like, different examples from the Bhagavatam is that, like, for example, the kings who were under the captive of Jarasandha, they approached Krishna. They sent a letter to Krishna, please come and save us from the captive of Jarasandha. At the same time, Yudhishthira Maharaj sent an appeal to Krishna, please come to perform Rajasya sacrifice. Please come and take part in the Rajasya sacrifice. So both were actually two important services. So Krishna was perplexed as to which service I should perform first. So many times we are faced with such situation. We will not be going into detail what actually. But there are two services, which service to give priority to. So Krishna was perplexed, should I first go and save the kings or should I first go and help in the Rajasya sacrifice? And Mother Yashoda was perplexed. Krishna, she was feeding milk to Krishna, at the same time milk was boiling in the pot. That was also meant for the service of Krishna. So which service to take care of? Should he stop serving Krishna or should he perform, go to that service, particular service? Or Queen Kunti was in a perplexity. Queen Kunti, we'll see in the next chapter, the Queen Kunti was thinking, she was thinking at one point, should I ask Krishna to stay back? If Krishna stays back, my family members in Dwaraka, they will feel separation from Krishna. And if Krishna goes to Dwaraka, then my sons Pandavas will feel separation from Krishna. So she was actually feeling, should I pray to Krishna to stay back or should I pray to Krishna to go? She was perplexed. And then she offers a prayer, Atha Vishvesha Vishvatman Vishwamurti Svakeshme. Actually, please destroy my family attachment towards both my Vrishnis and also towards my sons. So many times we face with these two choices. This is called ethical crisis. In such an ethical crisis, we have to understand what is the higher principle and what is the lower principle. And in a moral crisis, we just simply require determination to make the right choice. It is not difficult to understand what is the right choice. We simply require determination. But in an ethical crisis, we need to have a proper understanding of the scriptures in order to make the right choice. It does not simply require determination, but we need to have right understanding of scriptural wisdom. So Arjuna has already faced, even in the starting of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna faced an ethical crisis between Kula Dharma and Kshatriya Dharma. That's like another example of ethical crisis. So basically, Bhima's voice is like voice of justice. Draupadi's voice is voice of mercy. So that is why if we see Ramayana basically contains moral crisis. Ramayana basically talks about moral crisis, making choice between right and wrong. And Mahabharata contains ethical crisis with respect to different dharmic principles, with respect to diplomacy and dharmic principles. So therefore, Mahabharata is more difficult to understand than Ramayana. But Srimad Bhagavatam contains ethical crisis with respect to love for Krishna, with respect to service to Krishna. So therefore, it is more difficult to understand. Like in the case of Bali Maharaj, he faced an ethical crisis. Should he obey the spiritual master or should he actually give charity to Vamandev? So both were actually two right principles. So in this way we see there are different ethical crises. So Arjuna resolved the ethical crisis in the thoughtful manner. So therefore, that is why scriptures, they do not simply give a black and white solution. Scriptures actually force us to think deeply. They force us to actually go deep into the situation, and they force us to actually think deeply. So although Krishna was externally testing Arjuna, but internally Krishna was guiding Arjuna as a super soul. So Arjuna made the right choice. He did not kill Ashwatthama, but he simply punished Ashwatthama by removing the jewel and by shaving Ashwatthama. So in the fifth canto, in the 26th chapter, when there is a description of hellish planets, so it is described about one of the hellish planets. A sinful king or a governmental representative who punishes an innocent person or who inflicts corporal punishment upon a brahmana falls down to the hell named Sukaramukha, where the most powerful assistants of Yamaraj crush his limbs just as one crushes sugar cane. So why I am quoting this verse is that it is described that when a king inflicts corporal punishment upon a brahmana, corporal punishment means completely killing a brahmana, when a brahmana commits a mistake, then such a king actually will go to this particular hell. So when brahmana commits a mistake, he has to be punished, but he should not be given a corporal punishment. So that is why Arjuna did not give a corporal punishment. He did not kill Ashwatthama, but he actually removed the jewel of Ashwatthama, because the jewel represents his head. In that sense, he beheaded Ashwatthama. In that sense, he actually fulfilled the vow he took to Draupadi. He satisfied the vow he took to Draupadi. At the same time, in one sense, he killed Ashwatthama because he actually insulted Ashwatthama. That is actually worse than death. In that sense, he actually satisfied Bhima also. So in this way, we see that Arjuna actually perfectly satisfied all the authorities. And finally, another lesson we can see, the last lesson is that how the different Vaishnavas, they had actually different opinions. All these Vaishnavas, Bhima and Draupadi, Nakula, Sahadev, Yudhishthira Maharaj, all were Vaishnavas, but they had different opinions. All these opinions were based on selflessness. So even in the spiritual world, even in the community of Vaishnavas, there may be different opinions, but all are based on actually selflessness. So the material world is nothing but, one class Radhana Swami Maharaj explained, material world is nothing but varieties of ways of rebelling against Krishna. And spiritual world is nothing but varieties of ways of serving Krishna. So here we see the unity in diversity. Although essentially all these Vaishnavas, they had the essential nature of devotion to Krishna and selflessness, but still even in that there is actually variety, because different people gave different this one. So in this way Arjuna actually passed the test. Then all the Pandavas and Draupadi, lamenting for their sons, performed the death rites for the dead relatives and carried them for burning. So I'll end here. Grantharan Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Ethical crisis with respect to service to Krishna, surrendering to Krishna, with respect to love for Krishna.